The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I should be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with the Reader's Digest. And it's a dear reader note from the editor. A few thanks. Here are some things I am thankful for as we present the winners of our third Nicest Places in America search. Harding Park, New York. For years, I've driven south to JFK Airport from my home and looked down from the Whitestone Bridge between Queens and the Bronx to wonder about the tangled little neighborhood sticking out into the East River with views of Manhattan. Out of nowhere, a resident named Lydia Clark Sumter solved the mystery and gave me a smile by going to rd.com/nicest to nominate the collection of 236 homes. Turns out Harding Park began a century ago as a vacation tents leased to blue-collar families and evolved, through remarkable twists and turns, into an example of diversity and neighborliness, not to mention our winning place in New York State. Thank you, Lydia. Nextdoor.com. I'm a Nextdoor user in my Connecticut community and love how its feed, essentially an online version of the bulletin board of the hardware store, brought people to our search. In fact, 19 of the 50 nicest places, including Texarkana and Harding Park, came from its members. Sarah Fry, Nextdoor CEO, served as a judge. Thank you for your partnership. My fellow judges, the panel has included the nation's leaders in hunger relief, positive media, kindness, and civility. In an area of political division, they prefer to focus on all ways that America's pulled together, and I'd put their expertise in American generosity against anyone's. Thank you, judges, for insight into submissions and your picks. A big thanks to all my fellow editors as well. To weigh the votes and select the single nicest place in America is my job, but this time I really needed their help. Write and let me know if I got it right. And thank you, too, for reading. Letters to the Editor on the September issue. Laugh yourself smarter. Your article says that laughing won't help with weight loss because you would have to laugh loudly for up to 3 hours to burn off a bag of potato chips. Is that a large, medium, or small bag of chips? I can laugh for quite a while, so I just need to know how big a bag of chips I need to lose weight. Your article devoted 12 pages to laughter and how good it is for you. Amazing enough, the Bible manages to say pretty much the same thing in just 8 words. In Proverbs 17, chapter 17, verse 22, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. I was in the hospital after a stroke due to stress. When I came home, my wife handed me the September issue, open to your cover story, where she had underlined the words, humor can help refrain stressors. My mother, a nurse, always stressed, oops, not a good word choice, emphasized that a happy mind is good for your immune system. At 84 years old, I have always tried to keep that in mind. Saving Grandpa's Home. After chatting with my friend Eileen, who had recently lost her father, I read your article by a man who had discovered memories in the old family farmhouse. I was especially moved by the words his father wrote in a letter home during World War II. All is well here. Please don't worry, I am doing fine. I know it was not just the author's father talking to his son. It was also Eileen's father and my father talking to us. Thank you for the tears of sadness and joy. Big Apple facts this ball once too. You shared the old custom from colonial New England of trying to peel an apple in a single unbroken strip, then throw it over your shoulder to see what letter formed on the floor, as it was believed to determine the initial of your future husband. My mother did this in 1920s and passed the custom along to me. I did it with my friends in the 1960s and showed my daughters how to do it. Of course, we did it just for fun. The teacher who changed my life. I attended a small rural high school in a class with 64 members. From the 1940s to the 1980s, Mrs. B. taught English. Several years after she retired, Mrs. B. brought her car in to be serviced at the Ford dealership where I was a service manager. Later, the dealer's wife told me that Mrs. B. had told her that of all the students she had over all those years, I was the one she would have most liked to have killed. Coming from her, I consider it an honor and a distinction. Boy, what a distinction. I was in fourth grade, and I had hated reading. I couldn't read and was always in the lowest reading groups. But Mrs. Dorman could read to the class after lunch. We could lie down and just listen. In time, she taught me to read and to love books, which saved me from a troubling childhood. I went on to teach first grade, and after lunch, I would always read to my class. Thank you, Mrs. Dorman. Household helpers. In 20 chores you can stop doing, you suggest not mowing your lawn every week. That might be good advice during really hot or cold weather, but during high growth season, you actually save time by cutting your lawn weekly. Plus, it's better on your mower. Sure, you can skip peeling vegetables to save time, but don't skip washing them. Lots of unwashed hands and dirt ride along with those carrots and cucumbers before they land in your cart, and the carts are not always clear either. The role of a lifetime. And there's a picture of three young women, a blonde, a brunette, and another brunette, both with blonde streaks, sitting in wheelchairs. Chelsea Hill, flanked by fellow roulettes Samantha Lopez and Connor Landis, wants her dancers to feel empowered. Everyday heroes. A pioneering dance troupe is proving you can chase your dreams, even in a rolled wheelchair. Since the age of time, Chelsea Hill had dreamed, since the age of three, Chelsea Hill had dreamed of becoming a dancer. The only thing I loved was dance, she told CBS News. That ambition nearly ended one night in 2010. Hill, then a 17-year-old high school senior in Pacific Grove, California, was in a car accident that put her in the hospital for 51 days and left her paralyzed from the waist down. For most people, that would have dashed any hope of a dancing career. For Hill, it was the beginning. Far from being an obstacle, a wheelchair emboldened her. I wanted to prove to my community and to myself that I was still normal, she told Teen Vogue. Whatever normal meant. Normal for her meant dancing. So Hill did it in her wheelchair, right alongside her non-disabled high school dance team. Half of my body was taken away from me, and I have to move it with my hands, Hill told Today. It definitely took a lot of learning and patience. After graduation, Hill wanted to expand her dance network to include women like her. She met people online who had suffered various spinal cord injuries, but shared her determination, and then invited them to dance with her. It was such an amazing experience. Hoping to reach more people in a larger city, Hill moved to Los Angeles in 2014 and formed a team of dancers with disability she called the Rolettes, a sly nod to the Rockettes. I want to break down the stereotype of wheelchair users and show that dance is dance, whether you're walking or you're rolling, she told CBS News. Dancing on wheels, the Rolettes discovered, can be just as fast-paced, artful, and fulfilling as the foot-based variety. In disabled dance competitions around the country, the six-member team, there are also a number of auxiliary members, grooves to Selena Gomez and Ed Sheeran tunes, rocking their upper bodies, jerking their heads to syncopated beats, striking poses and steering their wheelchairs in a well-timed, dynamic, highly choreographed routines. They're having fun, and as the audience's exuberant reactions indicate, the fun is contagious. Hill has attained what many of us never will, her childhood dream, teach dancers. She's a dancer, but the Rolettes have helped her find something else, just as fulfilling. Every year she holds a dance camp for wheelchair users of all ages and abilities, with an eye on helping to define their inner Ginger Rogers or Julianne Hough. She calls it the Rolettes Experience, and in 2019 she had 173 participants from 10 countries attended. For many, it was the first time they'd felt they belonged. I had a girl said it was the most empowering thing when she rolled into a room and everyone was at eye level, Hill told CBS News. Stephen Aleo told Teen Vogue that working with Hill challenged her to be more independent. My injury doesn't stop so I can live my life. So why am I going to stop living my life because of my injury, she said. Edna Serrano says that being part of the Rolettes team has given her the courage to get behind the wheel of a car. I didn't know I could do so many things that these girls have taught me, she says. I didn't know I could be sexy. It's so powerful to have my teammates in my life because they're my teachers. I have much more confidence. The dancers aren't the only ones feeling inspired. One woman saw the YouTube video of the team competing, Google Rolettes Tournament, and commented, "You guys are so awesome. I'm in tears because you rock. To be in a wheelchair and still be so beautiful makes me know I can be beautiful too. Thank you. Feel free to come find me." Cut into the chase. And there's a picture of a young gentleman with a beard, a short beard, and his baseball cap on backwards, and he's running. He's being followed by two men and two women who are also running. Kyle Cassidy and three other members of the Annenberg Lunchtime Running Group were stretching on the grounds of the University of Pennsylvania, waiting for a few stragglers. The Penn colleagues and other community members meet 3 days a week for a roughly 30-minute jog and an occasional lecture. That's right. During some runs, one of them delivers a talk. Topics range from the brain to Bitcoin. Not your normal exercise chatter. But on this day, last January, it would not be their normal run. The first clue that something was off was the man who sprinted past him. Probably running a 7:15 pace, Cassidy told the runner's world admiringly. That's 7:15 for an hour, for a mile. Cassidy discovered what the sprinter was so fleet of foot. When another ran by yelling, "Help! He took my phone and laptop!" At that, the group did what running groups do. They ran, trailing the suspect down the streets of Philadelphia until he ducked into a construction site. The runners split up. Cassidy ran to the far side of the site to cut the thief off, while the others wandered the neighborhood, hoping he had dumped the lost loot in the backyard. No luck, so they decided to ask residents whether they'd seen the guy. When they knocked on the door of one row house, they were in for surprise. Unbeknownst to them, the perp had already emerged from the construction site and was hiding behind a bush by that very house. As the owner opened the door, the suspect darted out from behind the bush and right into the arms of campus police, who joined the chase shortly behind the runners. The members of this running group are not hardcore jocks, but they do understand the benefit of a little exercise. Running is typically a useless sport where you turn in fat cells into heat, Cassidy told the Philadelphia Inquirer, but occasionally it can be useful, and here was one of those opportunities. How about some laugh lines? I sleep with a knife under my pillow. You never know when someone is going to break in and give you a cake. I used to be able to pull all-nighters, but now I can barely pull all-dayers. People in sleeping bags are the soft tacos of the bear world. Any job is a dream job if you fall asleep in meetings. There are many theories why humans even need to sleep, but I'm sure it's to charge our phones. Accidentally fell asleep smoking an e-cigarette. When I woke up, the whole house was on the Internet. A life well lived, betting on humanity. An unlikely friendship teaches one woman the importance of taking a chance on others. Our families live more than 450 miles away, so a few weeks before Thanksgiving one year, my then-husband and I decided to invite a guest over for the holiday. I called a senior center in the Dallas area, and they suggested Ilse, a woman I've imagined to be quiet, soft-spoken, and serene. I was wrong. Ilse was a stubborn 78-year-old force of nature. She enjoyed complimentary gambling junkets to Las Vegas and kept a local bookie on speed dial. She favored sequin T-shirts and her tiny wire-haired mutt named Speckles and spending time at the senior center. Describing this opinionated four-foot-four woman as a firecracker would be like referring to the Olympic torch as a disposable lighter. On Thanksgiving, Ilse plopped her oversized purse on the kitchen counter and with a wide, denture-filled smile, welcomed the glass of wine my husband offered. By the end of the evening, we felt as if this quirky septuagenarian were an old friend. 2 weeks later, I invited her to lunch. The more time I spent with Ilse, the more she became like a surrogate grandmother, albeit a softly one. She wasn't afraid to share her opinion with others or to ask me when I was finally going to have children. "You're not getting any younger," she'd say. I soon became her personal Uber driver, minus the fee, and I noticed that there were more favors I agreed to do the more she asked of me. 6 months after we met, desperate for a backup, I called her only child, Ralph. He claimed he didn't have time to help. I questioned his "I'm too busy" excuse, but I kept my thoughts to myself. A few months later, Ralph passed away. After the funeral, I realized Ilse was too distraught to be left alone and helped her hire a caregiver. Having known her for 2 years, I felt responsible for her. She was like family to me, and I was the only one left in her life, in her tribe. Each time I stopped by her apartment, Ilse seemed more disconnected with the time before. Late one afternoon, she called from the emergency room to tell me she had tripped over a monstrous coffee table. Using a spare key she'd insisted I make months before, I searched her apartment for other trip hazards. The table had to go. The next morning, she called to ask about her table. She was angry and told me how upset she was that I had given away a family heirloom. Then she hung up on me. When Ilse called that evening to apologize, I told my husband to say I wasn't home. I was still angry and hurt. The following day, I returned her call but was unable to understand what she was saying. I drove her to the emergency room, where the doctor confirmed she had suffered a mild stroke. During the next few days, I dropped by her apartment, but she was no longer the vibrant, obstinate Ilse I knew. At the end of the week, I received an early morning call from her caregiver. "Please come over now," the woman said, her voice matter of fact. "She's passed away." When I arrived, I saw Ilse lying on her bed, motionless, her eyes closed. I sat on the edge of the bed and held her frail hand, too shocked to cry. The morning after Ilse's death, I pulled her will out of my file cabinet. Ilse had insisted I take a copy of it a year earlier. I read through it and stopped when I saw my name. She had left me $50,000. I didn't remember her saying anything about her bequest. If she had, I would have insisted she donate the money to charity or give it to a friend she had known longer. I knew I couldn't spend what she had left me on myself. Ilse was a friend. I'd helped out of loyalty and respect, not with the expectation of being paid. Her attorney sent me a check, and I opened an investment account in her honor. Over the next 20 years, Ilse's gift grew and gave me the opportunity to disperse funds in her name to a cause she cared about deeply, children. Various families and charities benefited from her donations. Some families received funds to send their grade schoolers to summer camp. Through the local food bank's Find Four Kids program, her donation provided children who relied on daily school lunches with weekend backpacks filled with food to take home with them on Fridays. A few days before my unconventional friend died, I heard her on the phone asking about the odds. I don't know whether her last bet paid off. I didn't ask her bookie when I met her at Ilse's funeral. Yet the gamble I'd taken years before when I placed a call to the senior center and met Ilse had definitely made my life richer. I took a chance on humanity, and Ilse's friendship was the jackpot. Beware of zombies, mombies. What's a smombie? That's S-M-O-M-B-I-E. It's a portmanteau of smartphone zombie. In other words, someone who crosses the street without looking up from his or her phone could also be referred as roadkill. How to sound smarter with expert help. Trying to impress the boss, the kids, or a date? We looked at scientific studies and boiled down the best insights into these quick tips. Sheepishly, Kevin Adkins admits that he's insecure. He uses big words to appear smarter. Only all I need to impress the person, says the 45-year-old. Dates with women? Definitely. At the grocery store? Not so much. A few years ago, when flirting with a stylist at the barbershop, he asked her to give him a symmetric haircut instead of just requesting that she trim it evenly. And when he gave an attractive woman directions, he made a point of telling her that the two options they discussed were equidistant, rather than simply saying that both were about the same distance. Adkins is among the myriad Homo sapiens who suffer from periphrasis. Translation. Many of us use longer words in place of shorter ones, because folks know, consciously or unconsciously, that others form impressions of them after a glance or a short conversation. They often work harder to give the right impression. People think, if I can show that I have good vocabulary, I'll sound smarter, says Daniel Oppenheimer, Ph.D., a professor of psychology at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. The problem with this plan is it can easily go wrong. It's almost a game that two people are playing, says Eric E. Igor, Ph.D., a social psychologist at Ireland's University of Limerick. If the observer person B doesn't have the same theory, it can backfire. Person A may be perceived as pretentious instead of intelligent. Using big words may also confuse listeners, which is definitely moving in the wrong direction. People associate intelligence with clarity of expression, says Oppenheimer. That's especially true when it comes to written word. A small study cited in Applied Cognitive Psychology found a negative relationship between complexity of writing and judged intelligence. The more writers tried to sound smart, the less intelligent they were perceived to be. So what can you do to sound smarter? Speak clearly and directly. Leave the dictionary and thesaurus at your desk and follow these tips, which come from behavioral psychologists and other very bright people. Number one, plan ahead. Whether you're in a private conversations or at a company-wide town hall, the most important thing you can do to make yourself heard, loud and clear. This can be daunting for an introvert and for the rest of us. The key, preparation. If you're interviewing for a job, review the posting and take advantage of the whole Googleplex of information about your prospective company. If you're attending a staff meeting, check the agenda. Going on a date? Plant some talking points, even if they're just about some favorite TV shows or movies. Feeling prepared will put you at ease, and that will boost your confidence. Number 2, make eye contact. If someone looks at you while you're talking, you're more likely to think he or she is smart. Good eye contact means the other person is responsive to what you're doing or saying, says Bogdan Wojcicki, PhD, a professor at Social Sciences at Humanities in Poland. If he is not responsive, this means that either you are dull or he is dumb. No wonder that, having such a choice, most of us prefer that think that he is dumb. This perception may be grounded in truth. Researchers at Brandeis University found that conversationalists when maintained eye contact scored higher on IQ tests than those who avoided someone's gaze. Number 3, strike a power pose. Here's a telling bit of business science. Researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Media Lab concluded that they could accurately predict the outcome of any negotiation, sales call, or business pitch 87% of the time without hearing the conversation. How? By observing the speaking-listening ratio, interruption patterns, and body language. How open or closed your posture is conveys how open or closed you are to the physical, mental, and emotional advances of others. Openness can convey confidence. To project self-assurance in a meeting, adapt an open, expansive pose. Sit up straight and leave your arms widely spread on the table or at your sides. This also works if you're trying to attract someone's eye. If you're worried about projecting confidence, run through a couple of power poses, such as standing with your hands on your hips or using them to lean on your desk, in your office or the bathroom before your event. Research from social psychologist Amy Cuddy, PhD, has shown that holding these poses for just 2 minutes can lower stress and increase feelings of power. Eliminate pauses. Confidence is as perceptible as your voice as it is in your body language. As you have probably noticed from watching any political panel show, public event, or business meeting with multiple speakers, the winner of the talk is usually the person who speaks most energetically and fluidly. Too many pauses make you sound unsure of yourself. And if you are unconvinced by your own ideas, why should the rest of the room be convinced? Theoretical physicist Leonard Modulo points out the impact of this bias. If two speakers utter exactly the same words, but one speaks a little faster and louder and with fewer pauses and greatest variation in volume, that speaker will be judged more energetic, knowledgeable, and intelligent. Number 5, restate other people's smart points. Because one of those unfair but true mental quirks, the person at a meeting who simply summarizes the good points made by everyone else will often be better remembered than the people who came up with the ideas in the first place. If you are struggling to get a word in at your next staff gathering, take notes on the best comments your coworkers deliver. Near the end of the meeting, restate those ideas in a concise matter-of-fact way. Even when giving credit to your coworkers, you will sound smarter. Number 6, tell some jokes. A French study published in the journal Psychological Reports found that women find men they overhear telling funny jokes to be smarter and more attractive than those who heard conversing about mundane topics. Other studies have shown that funny women similarly appear smarter to others. There may be some validity to this because a certain level of intellect is required to consistently make clever remarks. So you can use humor as a hard-to-fake cue to your intelligence. Just don't forget the punchline. Spoiler alert! Way to ruin the surprise! Hispanic exclamation points. World of Medicine. Short on sleep, don't forget to drink water. In a Pennsylvania State University study involving more than 20,000 participants, people who said they got only 6 hours sleep regularly ran a greater risk of dehydration than those who got 8 hours. The reason might lie with a hormone called vasopressin, which helps regulate the body's fluid levels. It's released in greater quantities later in the sleep cycle, so people getting less shut-eye might not have the optimal amount at all of it. If you know you're short on slumber, make a point of drinking more water. 10-minute cancer test. Australian researchers have developed a test that can detect cancer cells in 10 minutes with 90% accuracy. Healthy DNA and cancer DNA, it turns out, stick to metal surfaces differently. When cancer DNA is added to water mixed with gold nanoparticles, which give the water a pink appearance, the water retains its rosy hue. When healthy DNA is added, it binds to the nanoparticles in a way that turns the water blue. Because the test is cheap and simple, it can be used as an initial screening at your primary care physician's office, with follow-up if necessary. Researchers are now working toward clinical tests with patients who have various types of cancer. Oh, that's cool. Improving vision and hearing deters Alzheimer's. Research at the University of Manchester found that treating two common complaints of older adults could have the happy side effect of keeping their brain sharp. One study followed 2,000 older adults from the English Longitudinal Study of Aging. The rate of cognitive decline was slowed by 50% following successful cataract surgery. In another, 2,000 participants in the U.S. Health and Retirement Study showed a 75% slower rate of cognitive decline after they started using hearing aids. Experts theorize that the social isolation that often accompanies hearing and vision loss can mean less intellectual stimulation for your brain. Fixing those issues allow you to participate in more brain activity pastimes, thus helping ward off elements of dementia and Alzheimer's. Well, I ought to be really good then, because I have both hearing aids and cataracts. Exercise prevents falls. Each year, at least a third of the people over the age of 65 take a tumble. A meta-analysis of 108 trials found that there's one factor associated with notably reduced risk, physical activity. And we actually read about this before in Consumer Reports a couple of years ago. People who participated in Tai Chi fell 19% less often, while those who did balance and functional exercises, such as step-ups, chair rises, or standing on one leg, fell 24% less. Most effective of all was combining multiple types of exercise, including lifting weights and balance exercises. People who did that decreased falls by 34%. Common drugs depression risk. Depression is listed as a potential side effect of more than 200 medications, including proton pump inhibitors such as Prilosec or Nexium for acid reflux, beta blockers for high blood pressure, benzodiazepines such as Xanax for anxiety, and ibuprofen and other painkillers. A Columbia University study of 28,000 adults found that more than a third of the participants were taking at least one of these drugs, and more types they took, the more likely they were to be depressed. The study does not prove that medicine causes the condition, but if you notice any common symptoms of depression, such as loss of appetite, excessive fatigue, or thoughts of suicide, ask your doctor whether they might be related to one of your meds. Nuts may boost sperm count. In a 14-week trial of 119 healthy men ages 18 to 35, those who added about 2 ounces, or about half a cup, of mixed nuts at their usual Western-style diet saw bigger improvements in their sperm count than in those who did not. Sniff rubbing alcohol to treat nausea. In a study of 84 emergency room visitors who had nausea or vomiting, participants who sniffed isopropyl rubbing alcohol felt better after 10 minutes than those who sniffed the placebo with the substitution of saline. The alcohol had a beneficial effect even when the people hadn't taken anti-nausea medications. Fish is good for diabetes, but only if it's unpolluted. Researchers have long been stumped by whether eating fish reduces the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Some studies have shown that a dose does, while others have detected no effect or concluded that it needs to increase this risk. A Chalmers University of Technology study may explain the contradictory results. The study compared blood samples and diet questionnaires from 842 participants, half of whom developed type 2 diabetes after about 7 years. This showed that fish consumption as a whole has no effect on diabetes risk. Then, using a new data analysis method, one of the study authors, we screened out the effect of environmental pollutants. We were then able to see that the fish itself produces clear protection against type 2 diabetes. However, participants who ate a lot of fatty fish, such as salmon and herring, also had high levels of environmental pollutants in their blood. These fish are the most likely to contain accumulated pollutants such as DDT and PCB, which have both previously been linked to increased risk of type 2 diabetes. To make sure the fish you eat is free from pollution, check the Environmental Defense Fund's seafood selection, seafood.edf.org, for the choices least likely to contain them. Then look for a wild-caught fish from sustainable sources, such as those certified by the Marine Stewardship Council. And with that, let us roll over to Consumer Reports. Gillette Venus Razors. This is the recall section, which we didn't finish last week. Gillette is recalling about 87,000 Venus Simply 3 disposable razors because a manufacturing problem resulted in misalignment of the blades, posing a higher risk of cuts during use. The razors were sold at stores nationwide from January 2019 through May 2019 for $6 to $10. Stop using the razor. Contact Gillette at 800-362-1258 or go to GilletteVenus.com for details and to get a postage paid return label to return the razors and receive a voucher for a replacement. Disney is recalling about 80,000 Forky 11-inch plush toys because the googly plastic eyes on the toys can detach, posing a choking hazard to young children. The toys were sold at Disney stores and Disney theme parks, online at ShopDisney.com, and through the Disney Store on Amazon Marketplace from April 2019 through June 2019 for about $20. What to do? Take the toy away from children and return it to the Disney Store, Walt Disney World, or Disneyland Resort stores for a full refund. Call Disney at 866-537-649 for details. Fisher-Price Inclined Sleeper Accessories. Fisher-Price is recalling about 71,000 Inclined Sleeper Accessories, included with ultralight day and night play yards, because infant fatalities have been reported while using other Inclined Sleep products, and this has been a big item on the news lately. The American Academy of Pediatrics discouraged the use of any Inclined Sleep products because they increase the risk of airway compression, suffocation, and death. The play yards were sold at juvenile product stores and mass merchandisers nationwide from October 2014 through 2019 for $90 to $110. What to do? Using the Inclined Sleeper accessory, stop using the Inclined accessory and call Fisher-Price at 800-432-5437. I'm sorry, that's 5437, yes. To go to servicematel.com for details and to get a refund or voucher. You continue to use the play yard part of the product without their Inclined Sleeper accessories. To learn about other Inclined Sleeper products that have been recalled and to react about CR's investigation into the safety of Inclined Sleepers, go to cr.org/sleeper1019. Everbelt Door Pulls. Everbelt is recording about 70,000 stainless steel door pulls because they have sharp edges on the back, posing a laceration hazard. The pulls were sold at Home Depot stores and online at HomeDepot.com from April 2018 through May 2019 for about $6. Stop using the regard door pulls and return them to Home Depot for a full refund. Call Home Depot at 800-305-1726 or go to HomeDepot.com for details. Product update, the latest ratings from our labs. And this is interesting. This is based Home Security Systems, and I wonder how they got this information I'm going to quote to you. How burglars respond to the presence of home security systems. And the survey was done in 2012 by the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology. If there is an alarm, 13% will continue with the burglary, 50% will discontinue the burglary, and 37% sometimes retreat. The best home security systems. Today's do-it-yourself security systems make protecting your home easier and more affordable than ever. Our latest ratings will help you turn your home sweet home into a home safe home. And I've got a picture here of a whole variety of them. Silent Sentry, CR Bernie Derrick uses an app to monitor a ringtone security system with an optional camera. And it shows a bunch of little appliances that they use for it. Burglary rates in the U.S. are declining, but a home was still broken in every 23 seconds in 2017, according to the FBI. So it's not surprising that property owners have long put up with the pricey multi-year contracts, extensive wiring, and ugly sensors that home security systems have traditionally required. Today's do-it-yourself security systems are changing all that. They're sleek and wireless and can be quickly installed without tools by just about anyone. Standalone security cameras and video doorbells don't provide the whole house protection that do-it-yourself security systems do, but they can be added to the systems to enhance their capabilities. Do-it-yourself security systems are also less expensive than traditional systems because in most cases you can monitor them yourself, eliminating the cost of professional monitoring. Keep in mind that any system that relies on wireless signals, as these do, is susceptible to being hacked, says Justin Brookman, Director of Privacy and Technology Policy at CR. Even so, with more than 8 million of them installed in American homes, they're catching on fast. Do-it-yourself versus the pros. The biggest difference between do-it-yourself and traditional security systems is that most do-it-yourself systems allow you to self-monitor, says Bernie Dietrich, CR's test engineer for home security products. That can save roughly $10 to $50 a month compared to professional monitoring, depending on the company and the services provided. With professional monitoring, a call center dispatcher alerts you and the police whenever an alarm is triggered. With self-monitoring, you'll receive a notification on your phone, but it's up to you to call the police. If you've done a good job of securely installing the door and window sensors, our test suggests you should receive notifications almost immediately when an alarm goes off. Hang on a second. My pages are stuck together here. Sorry about that. Dietrich says, still some homeowners, such as those who travel or have sporty cell phone reception, may find professional monitoring adds peace of mind that's worth the added price. Professional monitoring can be offered on a short-term, a month-to-month basis, or on a contract of a year or more. Long-term contracts generally lock in a price. Short-term or month-to-month monitoring allows you to cancel without penalty, but the company could raise prices at any time. Cut through the confusion. For all their convenience, do-it-yourself security systems can be a challenge to shop for. Each brand offers a slightly different combination of components you can expand on. Manufacturers may also add functionality or change the system's configuration and names over time. All of that makes it tough to do an apple-to-apple comparison. Our experts advise on which components you need and how much you have to spend, the pros and cons of our recommended models, and our ratings and detailed evaluations of 10 widely sold systems will help you find the best one for your home, and we'll run through those in a few minutes. How much security do you really need? Do-it-yourself security systems come with an array of different components and a wide range of prices. But what do you really need to protect your home, and what can you skip? CR's experts help guide you in the right direction. Assembling a basic system. The price of basic home security kits could make you think you can protect your house for about the cost of taking the whole family to a nice dinner. But that's often not the case. While basic kits might have enough sensors in a small home or an apartment, many homes will require at least a few more doors and window sensors or motion detectors for added coverage, says Bernie Dietrich, who oversees CR's home security testing. For example, the basic kits recommends cost $70 to $450. But after adding the components required to secure even an average-sized U.S. home, the total would range from about $300 to more than $800. With professional monitoring, the price goes up even more. Dietrich and his home team have determined that a basic home security system should offer six key components: a base station, a keypad or touchscreen control panel, contact sensors for windows and doors, motion sensors, key fobs, and range extenders. Most of the kits we tested offer these basic components. Many of the companies offer online tools to help you design the optimal system for your home. The base station. It acts as a bridge between the components and the internet and usually includes a siren, backup batteries, and backup cellular connectivity in case of a power or internet outage. Placed in a centrally located area so it can receive wireless signals from every sensor. The keypad or touchscreen control panel. Typically mounted to a wall, the keypad has 10 numeric buttons to enter codes to arm and disarm the alarm. Touchscreens, which look like a small tablet, allow you to enter codes to arm and disarm the system as well as control other smart home devices. Contact sensors. Sensors attack the doors and windows to detect when they're opened. Typically used only on ground floor windows, they can also be placed on second floor windows vulnerable to burglars. For the average size U.S. home, homeowners will need to purchase 5 or more additional sensors at $15 to $50 each. Motion sensors. These detect movement and can be more cost-effective than placing a sensor on every window and a door and door in rooms that have several. Some are programmed so that pets won't set them off. For the average-sized U.S. home, homeowners may need to purchase 2 or more additional motion sensors for $30 to $65 each. Key fobs and tags. These arms are disarm the system without turning the app, without using the app or keypad. Some also let you arm or disarm the system with a tap to the base station or keypad. Range extenders. This allows the base station and larger homes to communicate with sensors in distant parts of the house. Adding specialty components. Homeowners can beef up basic do-it-yourself home security systems by adding a number of specialty components. These aren't required for protection, but adding them allows you to monitor for additional threats such as fire, carbon monoxide, and leaks. Keep in mind that costs can quickly escalate. Adding just a security camera to a monitor to your pool or garden could cost up to $400. CR experts also caution consumers to be mindful of the threats to privacy that security cameras and video doorbells can pose. There have been multiple highly publicized instances of hackers gaining access to security cameras, says Justin Brookman, Director of Privacy and Technology Policy at CR. To decrease chances of such a privacy breach, the most secure systems let you use two-factor authentication when logging into your account. For more tips on protecting your privacy, see your guide to digital privacy on page 24, which we'll look at in a minute, or if not today, tomorrow. Security cameras and video doorbells, $50 to $400. These enable you to visually check on the house when you're not there and also to provide recorded events in the event of a robbery. They can be motion-activated or continuously record on a loop. Environmental sensors, $20 to $80. In addition to smoke, fire, and carbon monoxide detectors, these include alarm listeners that are activated by the sound of those detectors going off. Leak and freeze detectors are also worthwhile additions to security systems in homes with pipes that might freeze in the winter. Garage door tilt sensors, $30 to $48. A good idea if you're worried about burglars entering your home through the garage. The sensors are placed on the interior side of the door and alert you whenever it is raised. Glass break sensors, $35 to $75. A burglar could foil a contact sensor by breaking the glass at a picture window or by sliding glass door. These detect the sound of shattering glass and trigger an alarm before anyone can enter. Sirens, $30 to $80. Standalone sirens can be placed away from the base station to startle an intruder and alert others to possible danger. If you live in a large home, you might consider installing multiple sirens or even a siren outside. Panic buttons and pendants, $20 to $40. Panic buttons alert a monitoring service that you need help. They're usually wireless, allowing you to place them in any room. Panic pendants work on similar fashion, but are worn by the user. Do-it-yourself systems that would alarm you. Most home security systems do a good job at detecting a break-in. The differences are in the details. Here are six of our top-rated models and what sets them apart. A user-friendly favorite. Nest Secure Alarm System Starter Pack scored 89 at a score of 89 out of 100, cost $300. Pro. Next Secure Pack's performance and convenience into a pleasingly minimalist design. It responds to voice commands and come with two tags to arm and disarm without using a code. Cons. Security or smart home additions are limited and can be expensive. Optional professional monitoring costs a comparable price of $29 per month, $19 per month with a 3-year contract. Bargain basics, sorted 88. Ring alarm kit 5-piece at $200. Easy to set up and use. The kit and optional monitoring, $10 per month or $100 per year, are cheaper than most we tested. Additional contact and motion sensors cost $20 and $30. It doubles as a smart home hub. Cons. Video quality of the add-on camera could be better. Extra security features such as smoke detectors and water sensors are somewhat limited. Flexible monitoring. The Adobe Essential Starter Kit at $250, it scored an 86. Pros. Adobe offers an array of add-on security features, including an outdoor siren, and integrates with Amazon, Google Nest, and other smart home products. On-demand monitoring for as few as 3 days is available for those who want the service only on occasion. Cons. The starter kit comes with a rather bare-bones group of components compared with most do-it-yourself security systems. Performance for a price. FrontPoint Home Safe Every Day, $70 with required 3-year contract, scored an 85. Pros: easy to set up and use. This system has more components than most and connects with a wide variety of security and smart home products, such as light bulbs. The hardware design for this kit has changed since we tested this system, but we accept it to perform the same. Cons: when you factor in the mandatory monitoring, $35 to $50 per month, this is one of the most expensive do-it-yourself systems. Great video and value. The simple, safe, the essential S5301 for $270. Scored an 83. Pros: simple, safe is easy to set up, and add-ons are typically cheaper than most. Water leak sensors cost $20 compared with $35 from Ring. Its add-on video camera is one of the best. Cons: it lacks certain features common to other systems, such as adjustable motion sensor sensitivity, and requires professional monitoring, $15 to $35 per month. The smart home standout: Samsung SmartThings ADT Home Security Starter Kit at $400, scored a 78. Pros: the Samsung system is easy to use, doubles as a smart home hub, and connects to a wider variety of devices such as windows, blinds, and water shutoff valves than other systems we tested. The cons: setup could be complicated. The system does not support security cameras, and additional contact and motion sensors are pricey at $30 and $40, respectively. And here's a rundown of their favorites. We already listed six of the top ones: the Next system, the Ring Alarm, the Adobe, the FrontPoint, and Samsung. There's also the Scout, which did all right, and it cost about $300. The Honeywell Home Smart Home Security Starter Kit for $450. The iSmart Alarm Preferred Home Security Package at $200. And the Uma Smart Home Security Starter Pack at $180. And it lists a variety of things that they have with them. None of them are spectacular. What's so great about used cars? Shopping smarts can get you a safer, more fuel-efficient vehicle than the one you may be driving now. We steer you to top choices. Many consumers still see a used car purchase as a compromise. But buying a lightly used vehicle with modern conveniences, onboard entertainment, and the latest safety features could be a smart move if you know what to look for, and the average price of a three-year-old used car is a little less than half of what it would cost new, according to the latest sales data from Kelley Blue Book. Many vehicles coming off leases and returning to dealerships as used cars tend to be in good shape and have low mileage, says Mel Yu, a CR Auto analyst. Buying used might make even more sense now because many 2016 models are equipped with the advanced safety features and Consumer Reports says all models should come with: forward collision warning, automatic emergency braking, pedestrian detection, and blind spot warning. Leased vehicles now make up nearly one-third of new car sales. That means more than 4 million of them will become available for purchase as used cars this year, according to the National Automobilers Association. And there should be a substantial supply of these desirable used cars for years to come, says Patrick Manzi, a senior economist for the association. Rideshare drivers, such as those who work for Uber and Lyft, are taking advantage of the influx of quality, well-equipped used cars, says Anil Goya, Executive Vice President of Operations at Black Book, an automotive pricing data company. Consumers benefit by being able to hire rideshare drivers who are using these almost new cars featuring advanced safety features. Despite all these selling points, some shoppers favor new cars to avoid the risk associated with secondhand vehicles. Concerns about reliability are understandable because used cars are often out of warranty and may have been driven for tens of thousands of miles. Each one of these has a unique maintenance repair history, but our annual surveys routinely find that many cars are quite reliable even after a few years of service. And there are ways to mitigate the risk. One way to feel more confident about buying secondhand is to get a certified pre-owned CPO vehicle. These typically combine a detailed vehicle inspection with reconditioning by the dealership, and they've sold with a warranty. A CPO car does cost more, but it can reduce the stress for used car buyers. No matter where you buy, be sure to go to the NHTSA.gov recall to see if the car has any open recalls that you can have the work done if necessary. Beware of pitfalls. Regardless of model or age, every used car has had an individual road experience and requires a close look to avoid expensive surprises. Here are steps you can take to better protect yourself. Check the vehicle history report. Carfax, AutoCheck, and similar services could tick you off to a potential problem or questionable history. But CEHAR has found that the vehicle reports might not capture all the incidents, especially those that are recent. Look for hidden signs of crash damage. Paint that doesn't match or uneven spacing between body panels indicates previous body work. Check for flood damage, particularly important. Inspect difficult-to-clean places for unusual mud, for mud and debris, such as gaps between the panels in the trunk and under the hood. Check the seat mounting screws for rust. Push the buttons. Try out all the car's features and functions. This can reveal some common problems, such as air conditioning that doesn't blow cold or a window that doesn't work properly. The tires. Check the older tires for uneven wear. That can indicate a lack of maintenance or a suspension problem. Second opinion. Always pay a mechanic you trust for a bumper-to-bumper inspection before you buy. And there's a it's going to list a few here. CR's picks for the best used cars. To arrive at these recommendations, we analyzed our road test scores for 2016 models, from when they were new, to compile a list of high-scoring vehicles. We reviewed our exclusive reliability and satisfaction survey data from CR members to find out which of these cars were standouts as used vehicles. Our annual auto survey covers almost 500,000 vehicles of various models and years. Based on that data, we've highlighted 10 used cars drawn from several popular categories and price ranges. These models are noteworthy for both their scores and prices. Prices for each model represent the retail range from a bare-bones base version to a well-equipped top trim version. The most common are priced in the middle of the range. We've also provided alternatives to each category. These models shined in our tests too, and CR members reported them to be reliable used cars. Many advanced safety systems that are now standard on several vehicles were only optional in 2016, so make sure the car you're considering is equipped with the safety features you want. Smart bargains. The Kia Soul. CR's take. Why settle for a boring small car when you can choose something with personality? The spirited Soul shines as a used car value, thanks to our low initial cost and steep depreciation, and it trades between $11,500 to $16,500. New passenger space is generous for a car of this size. The best version to get, the mid-level trim, plus is nicely equipped and comes with a bigger 2.0 liter engine, but the top trim, Exclaim, can be found with optional FCW. Chevrolet Equinox. CR's take. By the way, these are all 2016 models. And this, the Equinox trades from $12,320 to $18,000. CR's take. The Equinox is a tweener that competes with midsize SUVs, but is priced like a small one. CR considers it a smart used car value backed by much better than average reliability. The Equinox shrugs off bumps and nuts, and its handling is responsive. Ruts, and its handling is responsive. Best version to get. Might get rid of nuts, too. You can never tell. Choose a V6-powered Equinox with at least an LT trim for power amenities and available BSW. Stepped up to the Chrysler LTZ trim for more comfort features, plus the available driver confidence package, too, with FCW and lane departure warning. Under $20,000, the Mazda 6, 14 to 7 to 18. CR's take, the price of the sleek Mazda undercuts the more popular Honda Accord and Toyota Camry in the used car market. Plus, our Tesla stick is more fun to drive. Its fuel economy is class-leading at 32 miles per gallon, better than many compact sedans. Besides being smaller than its key rivals, the Mazda 6 cabin is roomy and comfortably fits a wide range of test drivers. Best version to get, the mid-level Touring has the desirable features like a power driver's seat, BSW, and rear cross-traffic alert. Models after the Touring technology package get an FCW and heated seats. The 2016 Hyundai Santa Fe Sport trades from $15,600 to just under $20,000. CR's take, we consider the five-passenger Santa Fe to be one of the most well-rounded of the two-row SUVs on the market. It's stylish, functional, and a used car bargain. Its comfortable ride, simple controls, and spacious cargo area make it easy to live with. The best version to get? Stick with the 2.4-liter engine. There are no trims to choose from, but look for a vehicle with the premium equipment package for leather upholstery, upscale amenities, BSW, and rear cross-traffic alert. The tech package has niceties such as heated rear seats and a panoramic sunroof. Under $27,000, the Lexus ES trades from $23,000 to $25,000. CR's take, the ES is comfortable, quiet, and efficient. The smooth, strong V6 engine returns a good 25 miles per gallon overall, and the impressive hybrid Vision got 36 miles per hour in our test. A used ES is a rewarding upgrade from a plain family sedan, bringing panache and luxury for the money, plus a full suite of safety gear is available. Best version to get, we recommend the hybrid ES300H with the premium and luxury packages, plus optional BSW. If you can, avoid models with a distracting mouse-like controller that operates the infotainment screen. And also under $20,000, the BMW X3, $21,500 to $26,500. And I will put in a plus for this. I have owned an X3, the 2016 X3, and it's a wonderful car. The X3 combines SUV ability with luxury car components and a sporty demeanor. Our testy found it to be functional, entertaining to drive. The steady ride, agile handling, responsible powertrain, and quiet cabin create a premium feel. The firm, supportive front seats position the driver high and upright, which makes good visibility. Best version to get. Stick with the punchy 28i, but look for one of the premium packages and rear-view cambers. Snowbelt drivers will appreciate the features such as the cold weather package. Well, we just got a little bit more than a minute left. Let's look at some life in these United States jokes. When people hear that my husband and I just celebrated our 60th wedding anniversary, they inevitably ask the secret to our long, successful marriage. In response, my husband will smile sweetly, nod my way, and explain, "We both love me." My friend took her teenage daughter to a new doctor for a checkup. The nurse asked the usual questions, including if she had an STD. "No," said the team, "we have a Toyota." One day, my physician father treated himself to a plate of raw oysters and offered to share them with me. Just as I was about to dig in, he picked up an oyster, examined it, and commented, "They remind me of infected tonsils." And that's the story of how he ended up eating the entire plate of oysters by himself. My 11-year-old takes his homework seriously. One question required him to write a sentence using the word version. His sentence, "Have you heard the Virgin Mary?" And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.